The Limerick Rake is one of the really good Irish songs of the 19th century. It is a very polished, well-structured composition, and it captures the rollicking devil-may-care rakishness of its title. We don't know who the author was, but it is generally thought that he was an educated man, possibly a schoolmaster. There are two versions, an English one and an Irish one. It is with the more popular English version that we will be dealing. As to the date of composition, internal evidence from some of the place names tells us that the version that we are discussing was written after 1837. Other than that, we cannot date it with any real degree of certainty. This is how Tim Lyons sings the song.
I am a young fella that says in bald in Castletown Corners. I'm very well known in Newcastle West. I spent many a night with Kitty and Judy and Mary. My parents rebuked me for being such a rake and for spending my time in such rollicksome ways. But I ne'er could forget the good nature of Jane August Fogg and me chewed Maratoshe.
The whole song itself, it's very, the word that comes to my mind on hearing it or reading it is it's hedonistic. It's very, very pagan in its own way. It's totally in favour of all the joys of the flesh. It's a type of song that the sentiment expressed you more often find in Irish songs like on Spallador. Absolutely unrepentant. And also in its form itself, you can see that the man who made the song, be a head schoolmaster or whatever, was certainly a very educated man. And in this type of song, as you see in the lines there, when he goes into a room and Bacchus is sporting with Venus, I mean, it's the type of song there where these people love to show off what education they had. And you bring in classical, mythological allusions all the time. As you know yourself there from other poets there, say like Johnny Nora A, a man that you've done some work on, certainly was very fond of this type of thing. I mean, if you're talking about the Irish peasant, a term that was used, you know, as a term of contempt, but the actual education among a lot of Irish 19th century peasantry, you know, was very, very broad and sweeping.
Monachán Shoey, you are a Limerick man and you're a historian of County Limerick. What do you make of the Limerick Rake?
Well, the Limerick Rake, it's a long time since I first heard the Limerick Rake. I suppose an Irish teacher, in fact, who was in this area in the late 1930s. And it was from him I first heard the Limerick Rake. And he had a bilingual version. And since then, I have knocked across it in a number of places and have had discussions about it with people from time to time. Now, the Limerick Rake obviously is a composition of somebody with a literary turn or bent, and I'm inclined to think that it may have been composed by a hedge schoolmaster. Now, I've no grounds for saying that apart from maybe the language of the thing. Now, since it is a bilingual composition, I'm wondering whether, in fact, the present version with Irish and English in it is a composite song, or whether it originated that way, I don't know. And another thing about it is the Irish verses mention places in Clare and Cork, while the English verses are confined to County Limerick, principally West Limerick. I'll read the verse anyway, I think, in Irish. Tá Colleen in Inish is Colleen a glower, is Colleen Biogele a Mullen a gore, Ach a Mullen a Colley, tan Colleen is far, agus fogamid showed Muratasha.
Me parents had reared me to shake and to mow, to plough and to harrow, to reap and to sow. But me heart been so weary to drop it so low, I set out on high speculation. On paper and parchment they taught me to write, in Euclid and grammar they opened me eyes, and in multiplication, in truth I was bright, agus fogam me chewed Maratoshe.
Now, another thing, of course, that one would like to know is the period in which it was written. And I think there are two clues in one of the English verses as to the period. At least it gives us an idea of where one might situate it in time. In the first, very first verse, he says, "I'm a young fellow, both airy and bold. In Castletown Conyers, I'm very well known. In Newcastle West, I spent many a note with Biddy and Jodie and Mary." Well, the two places I mentioned there, Castletown Conyers and Newcastle West. And if we take Castletown Conyers first, we have a name here that is a relatively new one, because formerly that place was known as Castletown McInerney, after the McInerney family, who had been there from since before the dawn of history, and by some very strange quirk of fortune, managed to hold on to their properties until after the Treaty of Limerick, though they were marked for confiscation or for dispossession at the Cromwellian period. The planter didn't enter into possession of the land, of their lands, and they were there until, as I say, after the Treaty of Limerick. Then the place was purchased sometime after by the Conyers family, and it was from them the name Castletown Conyers came. Now, Ferrer, in his History of Limerick, published in 1787, refers to the place still as Bally, or as Castletown McInerney, in his list of fairs, so that in 1787 it was officially and probably generally known, or universally known, as Castletown McInerney. So I don't think our song can be put before 1787. Now, Luce, in his Topographical Dictionary, published 1837, refers to Castletown Conyers, so we have the new name established. So I would put the composition of the Limerick Rake in between 1787 and 1837. Newcastle West, the second name that I mentioned, is a new form of the name, because certainly up to the 1820s, it was known simply as Newcastle. And I read one time that when the penny post was introduced, that town of Newcastle in West Limerick was supposed to be, any letters going there were supposed to be addressed to Newcastle, West Limerick. And in the course of time, it would appear that the West became disconnected from Limerick and came in as a suffix to Newcastle, giving Newcastle West. So, anyway, I think one could safely surmise that the Limerick Rake, or the verses anyway that deal with Limerick, were probably composed in the 1830s, or not much later, or much earlier. So
it was after 1830 anyway.
I think so, 1830. And again, I think that it was probably composed by a Hedge schoolmaster, because there are references to Euclid and other subjects,
grammar
and so on. That
of course, these were the subjects of the Hedge school.
Of the Hedge schools, all right. And, you know, it has a certain literary flavour, I think, that lifts it above the maybe level of what we may call the commoyes of the period.
Dr. Moore Murphy, you have made a study of the ballad singer and the seditious ballads in the 19th century. Now, you're very familiar with the seditious ballads. How would a ballad like the Limerick Rake compare with these seditious ballads?
Well, in the first place, I'd say that it's a lot better written than most of the seditious ballads that one sees in the Dublin Castle Files. The person who wrote it is obviously more acquainted with the English language, whereas many of the seditious ones are written by people who were fluent in Irish and who tended to translate directly from Irish to English, often making very little sense. So that would be the most obvious difference. The language is the main thing, I think, yeah. Some of the themes obviously come across, because many of the seditious ballads would appear to have been sung ostensibly by a character who was wandering the countryside, in the same way as the Limerick Rake is wandering the countryside, usually in search of work rather than enjoyment. So I think that would be the comparison note. The classical references in the Limerick Rake also occur in the seditious ballads. In this case, we have Bacchus and Venus. We tend to get the same things in the seditious. A few biblical references, King David, he appears too, especially 1830s and 40s in the seditious ballads. But generally we're talking about a higher kind of composition in the case of the Limerick Rake.
And we come along to this third verse here, which in which there's a reference to the town of Ratkeel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was obviously very popular with the girls.
Seems to have been, getting sweet cakes and bottles and God knows what. And the reference there at the end is the fascinating one to me anyway. I'm not sure what it is, but it's the girl from Arda, though being from the mountains, her stockings are white. And if I remember rightly, there's some song in Irish, which I can't place at the moment now, which starts, has something about a van nistochi mána, bavjalam vegomilat, and you begin to wonder what are nistochi mána. Like, how does he know what colour her stockings are? Or is it her stockings? Or is there a sexual connotation in this?
Yes, it would seem to have a sexual connotation.
I think so.
The other interesting thing about those two lines is that Arda isn't actually in the mountains.
That's right, yes. I wonder.
She could be from the mountains of West Limerick.
And be down in Arda, probably. Yeah. The Colleen, I'm
sure. The mountains don't really begin until you come to Barn again.
That's right.
If I chance for to go to the town of Ratkeel, the girls all around me do flock on the square. Some give me a bottle and other sweet cakes to treat me unknown to their parents. There is one from Muskeaton and one from the Pike and another from Arda, me heart had beguiled. Though being from the mountains, her stockings are white. Agus fog a mean shoot and maratoshe.
The John Damer mentioned in the next verse that we're about to hear was the nephew of Joseph Damer, who lived from 1630 to 1720. This Joseph Damer was a Cromwellian who came to Ireland and settled, and when he died, left a vast estate in six different counties. The total estate was valued at £400,000, a huge sum in those times. Both Joseph and John Damer lived at Shronal, near the village of Latton in County Tipperary. The Devonshire mentioned in the verse was William Cavendish, 6th Duke of Devonshire, who lived from 1790 to 1858, and was also famous for his great wealth.
To quarrel for riches, I ne'er was inclined, for the greatest of misers must leave them behind. I will purchase a cow that'll never run dry, and I'll milk her be twisting her horn. John Damer of Shronal had plenty of gold, and Devonshire's treasure is 20 times more, but he's laid on his back among nettles and stones, like a fog a mean shooting maratoshe.
Now this fifth verse deals completely with the poutine, really, and it's but of course it's all in a coded form.
It is indeed, yes. The cow, as you say yourself, is the image for the poutine still. And it just struck me now as we were looking at it that in the political ballads you get this kind of imagery too, the use of one image to transmit another secretly. Like, for example, if they're talking about, gutting all the Protestant landlords in some of the ballads, they talk about threshing the corn. Or they use the blackbird as the symbol of O'Connell. You know, there's a hidden image, there's an imagery which hides the reality, and of course it's always rural imagery that you find in the political ones, so I suppose this is a very obvious use of the same thing in a different context.
Now this cow she will feed without clover or grass, for she's pampered and barley, good corn and hops. She's warm and she's stout and she's free in her paps, and she'll milk without spancel or halter. The man that will drink it will cock his carbine, and if anyone coughs, there'll be wigs on the green. And the feeble old hag will get supple and free of his fog and meat shoot maratoshe.
And then there's that lovely little phrase, such a combing of locks.
Ah, yes, as there was about me. Yes, God only knows what they were at, but there was certainly
pulling the hairs.
Pulling the hair, definitely. Yeah, again, I think you've sexual imagery all hidden. And you get that again in some of the English... The English street ballads.
If I chance for to go to the market of Croom with a tilt and me hat and me pipes and good tune, I am welcome at once and brought them to a room where Bacchus is sporting with Venus. There's Peggy and Jane from the town of Brewery and Biddy from Bruffin, we all on the spree. Such a combing of locks as there is about me, a bespog and me chewed maratoshe.
Now, in this second last verse, we have the reference to King David.
That's right, yes, with his 1,000 wives. Or does his son has 1,000 wives, isn't it, here? And then we have the Limerick Rake talking about King David's wisdom being highly recorded. I was wondering there, is he mixing up two biblical characters? You know, is he mixing up Solomon, who's proverbial for his wisdom, with King David?
And Saul.
And Saul, exactly. That does happen sometimes, that there's a telescoping, like, of characters. I suppose,
but King David's sin was adultery as well, right. Which is
that's right.
Interesting.
That's true.
There's some says I'm foolish and more says I'm wise, but being fond of the women I think it no crime. For the son of King David had 1,000 wives and his wisdom was highly recorded. I'll till a good garden and live at me ease, and each woman and child can partake of the same. If there's war in the cabin, themselves they may blame, and the spog of me chewed and maratoshe.
The tune itself has taken on a life of its own. In England there during the 50s and 60s there was a song written by Ewan McCall called Champion of Keeping Them Rolling, which he sets out and instructs to be sung to the air of the Limerick Rake. So it's probably sung by a lot of people in the northeast of England without ever knowing. I mean, they'd be looking at that and wondering what the Limerick Rake is.
And now for the future, I mean to be wise, and I'll call all them women that acted so kind, and I'll marry them all on the morrow by and by, if the clergy agrees to the bargain. And when I'm on me back, when me soul is at peace, these women will gather to cry at me wake, and their sons and their daughters will offer their prayers to the Lord for the soul of their father.
Long Acre, the Limerick Rake, was presented and produced by Pat Feely and was first broadcast on RTE Radio 1 on January 31st, 1989.